Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
A milestone moment that all parents at some point get to, and it's going to be a tough, tough thing for me to get used to. I'll talk about it coming up at 8:20. I do want to get to some of your calls, though, people jumping in on the Cavs topic. I asked the question we've all asked. What is the thing you still need to learn from this team? And I think I actually have a pretty solid answer this time. That isn't just, well, I got to see it in the playoffs. That's what everybody wants to say. I kind of sounded like Jack Snows, the guy that called in that one night and talked about Bob Cousy being like the best point guard ever, which is just astronomically, galactically stupid to me is maybe a better way to put it. Yeah, that was dumb. My impressions as I get older just get worse and worse. Like, I'm so lazy with it. I always wanted that to be like a thing I went for. I always thought being like impressions guy was like the coolest thing. Not that I even wanted to do it as well as like a Frank Caliendo or anything, but I just wanted to be able to, like, you know, try to do some impressions and like nail them. And I try these at home, and like my voices all sound the same. I do like one voice, and I do that as like a nagging, like, you know, someone in our family if they're nagging us or whatever. It's the same voice I use for like people that we run into in public. It's terrible. But I end up just going back to voices that I've. That's probably why when I was, you know, co-hosting with Nick periodically towards the end of last year during the afternoon show search. Probably why he continued to try to make fun of me and get me to do as many impersonations as possible, because he knew that they were just absolutely god awful. So thanks to Nick, I'm scared out of ever doing them again. I'm just going to stick to my old guy talking about Bob Cousy voice for everything. I think we need to think deeper than just like, I want to see what this team does in the playoffs. And I know that this is kind of a recycled topic anyway, but it hit me today that like, that's the thing. Some real adversity is the one thing I haven't seen from this team yet. Like, how do they come out on the other side of it? Because these one-off losses, when you lose a game and then you win the next night or whatever, you win a couple nights later, that's not real adversity. Honestly, they're kind of facing some minor adversity right now in a one-game sample size or a one-quarter sample size, because they're down pretty big to the Thunder at the moment. How are they going to respond? Those are sort of the little nuances and things that I'm going to be watching for throughout, I guess, the rest of tonight, but also throughout the rest of the season as the schedule gets a little bit harder and you're playing tougher opponents. How do they respond when things aren't going so perfectly and you aren't, you know, you don't only have 5 losses on the season? That's one of the things I think I'm still waiting to see. Martin in Strongsville. What's up, Martin?
I think that tonight's game, to me, is more important than even the first one against OKC. We're talking about two teams that are playing, you know, firing on all cylinders, both playing really well. But when you play in the playoffs, you get to scheme for each other. You know, you see them one night, two nights later, you see them again. You know what they're doing well, and you then counter it. And that's the way I've always felt that tonight's game would be more important, because they now have seen each other. And right now it looks like OKC has figured out what we're doing and is starting to club us a little bit. Now, if we don't figure out a way to get back by tonight, then yeah, my doubts will persist even greater. But you got to beat the best, and you got to, when you have this opportunity, when you're playing each other so close within a week, that tells all about the coaching staff and the players, in my book. So, yeah, that's what I want to see tonight. If they win tonight, I'll be a little more inclined to think we got something. But if they don't, then that tells me they're not playoff ready.
All right, Martin, I appreciate the call. I think that's well said, though. And here's the thing. Like, even just going on the road to play a tough team is its own form of adversity, right? And especially a place like this, because OKC, I forget exactly what the record is. I think they're like 27 and like 2 or something like that at home. Like, they are just really good in that building. And so, yeah, I can understand why this is a smaller sense of, like a smaller chance for them to sort of prove in an adverse situation, a, you know, road environment that's going to work against you, and you don't have the friendly confines of Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse where guys are comfortable and they, you know, they're knocking on the shots and the role players are really balling. What are you going to do? Well, we're going to find out tonight because they're now down 23 points with 11 minutes to play in the second quarter. 14 points is all they scored in the first quarter. And I know this because I was doing the math on this a couple nights ago. That is easily their lowest scoring for first quarter of the season. And I think like three of the five games, the first, like where they had their lowest scoring first quarters, were three of their losses. Kenny Atkinson's like losing it right now, by the way. Gotta love that.
Just got teed up.
Did he? Oh, man. We're getting fiery Kenny Atkinson, man. Fiery Kenny. I think that was I think that was Donovan Mitchell's guy getting in his face to sort of calm him down. That's crazy. Johnny Bryant. Yeah, no. But this is what I'm talking about. Like, okay, you got Kenny Atkinson getting fired up about stuff. Like, he's mad. He's getting antsy. So if there's anything I'm waiting for the Cavs to still sort of show me, I think it's that. I'm not going to go to the low-hanging fruit of just saying they got to prove it to me in the playoffs. I just can't do that. It's too baseline, nothing. It's like it's nothingness. Everybody can point and say that. I'm more curious about like this element of during this regular season, they're bound to face adversity at some point. And maybe not. Like maybe they will be like the 15-16 Warriors who just like coast their way through everything and they don't really face adversity to the playoffs. We saw how they responded to it. That's kind of why I think it's an important thing to experience during the regular season. I do want to talk more about the Cavs, obviously, throughout the night, especially in regards to the trade deadline, because I do think that everybody wants them. I shouldn't say everybody, but there is some credence to the idea that they should jump in and go get that wing player they've been missing all these years because it will allow them to like take this team up a notch. But it's also interesting because it's not like you're a bad team right now. And you got to really think about like how much you want to mess with the chemistry. So it's like, what's more important to you? Adding a player, or what's more important to winning a championship? Adding a key player at the deadline or making sure your chemistry and everything sort of stays intact. That is one of the biggest things that I think this Cavs team has to sort of sort through as the deadline approaches. And I kind of know where their head's going to be at, but it'll be fascinating to see like how it all kind of actually plays out, because I don't think this team is going to be like big game hunting. Not that I shouldn't say big game hunting, because big game hunting is like Jimmy Butler. And they're not going to be in that stratosphere, obviously. Like, I don't think they're looking at, like, a star player. But are there some options for, like, wing scorers that they could pursue? Of course. You know, like, I've been talking for basically, like, 2 years now about them potentially going out after, like, Cameron Johnson. Like, somebody from the Nets, Cam Johnson, who can, like, knock down threes, can D guys up on the outside, that style of player. But again, like it's not so easy. Like, I know I had this debate with Nick, I think, end of last year, like just about the idea or the concept of, well, hey, you're in this situation, you got to push the chips into the center of the table, right? And I can wrap my head around that. I can see where you're coming with that, but it's almost like they're so good that they deserve a chance to kind of see this thing through, and you don't want to mess with a good thing. And that's why I don't know that they need to go out and like land the big name wing player that maybe comes to mind for you, or your favorite player that they've been linked to for the last couple of years but haven't actually gone out and pursued. And maybe things will change. Like if the next month, I guess you don't even have a month till the deadline, but if the next couple of weeks go poorly and some of this adversity that I've been talking about does strike, Maybe that pivots to them to being like, yeah, we got to upgrade something. I don't see that happening. And that, to my larger point, is what I'm getting at. Like, why mess with a good thing right now? This team, you can almost do more damage by trying to trade for somebody and insert them and then not fit than you can from, like, keeping it together. And it's crazy I'm saying that because I was very much in the camp of last year. You got to make a trade and shake things up with the core four because I'm concerned about fit between, I would say mostly at the time it was Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland, but I guess a little bit of like Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. They've dispelled all those things. And so as long as it's working and as long as you are continuing to prove that those things can work and that this is a viable thing, I got no problem with them like seeing this thing through, at least for this year. You know, it's clear this team likes to play for each other. There's no ego. There's no selfishness. There's no load management going on here. It's like they play a really fun style of basketball. And they've gotten to this point because they play so well together. You could cause more harm if you swing for something a little bit bigger to make the team ideally better and it doesn't work out or you miss on it, then you can really throw off the dynamics. It's kind of on a larger scale. Like, look what's going on with the Suns right now. Right? You get a new owner and Matt Ishbia, he comes in, starts paying all these guys. He's forcing all these trades across the league. He gets Kevin Durant. He gets Bradley Beal. And now Bradley Beal is reserved to the bench because he doesn't fit with what they're trying to do. And an owner basically just wanting to break into the league and, like, you know, make a name for himself and make his team look like it was unstoppable in an era that doesn't really revolve around big threes anymore. He tried, and now he's kind of left holding the bag, trying to find a backdoor out of it where it allows him to add maybe a different star player like a Jimmy Butler and get this thing back on the tracks for a team that's just kind of been meddling. So now this is different. Like, the Cavs wouldn't be going and getting like a big name player like that. But it goes to show how, you know, one move can cause a shakeup that maybe you don't want within your locker room, your team, your culture. Now, I get it. There's questions about, like, Caris LeVert, expiring contract, you know, hitting the apron figures. What does all that look like? Is it worth it doing, you know, and so do you trade him and try to get something back because you're worried about some of the financial part of this? And that does seem to be something the NBA's obviously put a lot of emphasis on because they changed the rules around the aprons and the salary cap. But I don't know that you necessarily, it's maybe that's like the one thing you do is you would maybe trade a Caris LeVert and that doesn't like derail everything. But you do have to be careful like what parts and pieces you pull out. It's a puzzle. A roster is a puzzle. And if you pull out the wrong piece, maybe a better way to put it is it's like a house of cards or it's like Jenga. And if you pull out the wrong piece, the whole tower could come collapsing down. And that's the last thing you want to do to your team is like throw off their rhythm because they're missing a player or a guy in the locker room. That worked, frankly. 216-474-0092 if you want to get in on the Cavs. When we get back, or coming up, I should say, in about 7 minutes from now, every parent reaches this stage. I just think I'm going to have a harder time than most trying to shake it. I will tell you what it is coming up 7 minutes from now on 92.3 The Fan. Doesn't swear and is all wholesome. Maybe it's because I went to John Carroll. I have no idea. But regardless, I do swear. And I swear a lot more than people think. And so when I'm at the store and I like this hits me that I forgot this thing, over the years I've gotten so common, like that's my go-to thing, is I say to myself, like, well, bleep me. Like, I can't believe I forgot that. First of all, am I weird? Do other people do this? Like, if you're...
It happens very often.
Okay, so I'm not the only one. Like, yeah. Like, it's kind of like when you're playing a video game and something goes completely wrong and you're just pissed and you want to, like, chuck your controller and you're like, you got to be, like, bleeping kidding me. Like, whatever. We all do it, right? It's a normal thing for people to say. The problem is I am no longer alone on these shopping trips. I have my 2.5 year, almost, he'll be 3 in May. I have my son with me, and so now he's like hearing me say these things. And I will say, like, I've said stuff around him before and gotten away with it. This was the first time that right after I said that, he turns his head around, like, out looking out the back of the cart, and he just starts dropping the F word, like, three times in a row. And I had to be like, no, no, we don't say that. And then, like, distract him by being like, oh, look at this toy. Like, I got him something off the shelf and, like, gave it to him to, like, distract him, and he started playing with it. And I text my wife, and I said, well, it finally happened. And she's like, oh, no, what? And I said, I dropped an F-bomb, and my son repeated the F-bomb, or our son repeated the F-bomb at Walmart. And she was like, oh, great, just great. She was like, well, I guess you really got to watch what we say. And this is the dilemma for me. Because, again, contrary to popular belief, I am pretty vulgar, especially when it comes to, like, being at home. And so I now have to find a way to, like, dial back the swearing that has engulfed me and consumed me over these years of, like, college, being married, or dating, or not, like, just having been, like, sort of not single, but, like, single in the sense that, like, I'm not, like, living with a child and have to worry about these things, living together with my wife, getting married, all those different things where, like, we could get away with these things and just talk to each other. It doesn't matter. Or I'm in the car by myself saying them when traffic's bad and somebody cuts me off and I might throw a curse word out there. And now I have to be more aware of that. And I feel like this is, like, my nightmare. How I don't know how to get this out of my vernacular. Like, it's funny. I used to not really swear much at all. This is going to just lead into Nick and Ken continuing to think that, like, I was just, like, this wholesome person. Largely because my mom, like, hates swearing. Hates it. And so when I was younger, like, even as I got older and understood what swear words were in high school and all that, I would swear around my friends. But as soon as I got home, it was like, nope, cut it off, don't do it. Because I knew my mom hated it. And I didn't want to see what would happen if I swore around her. Now that I'm older, I swear around her occasionally, and she's just like, oh, whatever. Like, she like rolls her eyes and just, like, laughs it off. But I know she still doesn't like it. But now I've gotten just, like, so used to it being part of my vernacular, part of my regular vocabulary, my everyday life, that I don't really know how to dial it back to levels where I wouldn't swear around my mom, or, like, turn it on and off in certain instances. Like, I'm so used to saying it in the car when things aren't going right in traffic, or somebody's, you know, like, in my way and they're going too slow in the passing lane, or, you know, at the grocery store, like I said, if I forget something and just being like, well, me. Like, so I am dreading trying to now reverse course and find a way to take this out of my vocabulary again. I don't know if anybody else sympathizes with me with this. I guess I want to know some advice on how hard it is. But this is going to be a real struggle for me. And I know there's going to be at least, like, 20 more times. That seems low. 50 more times that my son is just repeating swear words that I didn't intend for him to hear. 216-474-0092. If you have any tips or advice on how to ensure that I cut swearing out of my vocabulary so that my son doesn't pick up on it, I'm fascinated to know. This is not a problem that Jax or Hody have to worry about. They're, like, sitting here, like, looking at their phones. They're like, this is such a boring conversation. They're like, kids? What are kids? Like, that's... But I'm telling you, man, do you ever want to have... Jax, do you want to have kids one day?
I'm not sure.
Really? I mean, that's okay. I'm not judging you for it. If you don't want kids, it's fine. You're not sold on it yet.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know yet.
Hody, you want to have kids?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So one day, if Hody, it sounds like you definitely want to go down this path. Jax, maybe want to go down this path. This will probably be, maybe this is a reason why you shouldn't go down the path. If you swear too much and you're like, you know what? I like the freedom to say whatever the hell I want, whenever the hell I want. Well, you're in the wrong business for that because you work in radio. But at the same time, there's regulations against those things. But at the same time, maybe this is the kicker that puts it over the top as to why you don't want kids. If the horror story is about kids on airplanes and, like, the terrible twos and just, like, how bad kids can be at times, and, like, all the jokes that are made at the expense of, like, yeah, having kids is the ultimate form of birth control. Don't do it. Maybe this is the thing that will finally convince you not to if it's something that you're sort of torn on. So You have a girlfriend. Does your girlfriend want kids?
I don't think so.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Hey, everybody has their own way they want to do things. I'm not judging you for it. But it's fine. I get it. It's not for everybody. It's one of those things too. Where like it's hard. Like once you get there, you can't really take it back. Like there's no going back from that. I guess you could put the chart up for adoption, but that's like you know like once you have it and it's like you tried to usually that's for people. Usually people giving them up for adoption are like I can't take care of this child. You know. So yeah, it's not great, but. We'll see. Maybe there'll be a little Jax running around one day, and he'll be swearing like my son apparently is now, because I got such a potty mouth that I've now put swear words in his vernacular. 216-474-0092. There is an absolutely wild scenario playing out in the NFL right now. That is all. It's revolving around the Dallas Cowboys, what they're going to do for their head coaching position. And if they're going to somehow convince Deion Sanders to leave Colorado. I thought this had died down because the other night we got like a sort of repurposed quote through Adam Schefter from Deion Sanders that was like, I'm flattered for the opportunity and I'm honored that he would consider me for the job, but I'm good. Like I'm staying where I'm at was essentially how it sort of sounded. But suddenly, back from the dead, Undertaker style, Ed Werder, which when I saw it was Ed Werder reporting this, I was like, oh, I haven't had a good like Ed Werder report in a while that like really caught my attention. But this one did. Ed Werder says 9 hours ago, I'm being told that Deion Sanders would almost certainly accept if Jerry Jones offers to make him the next Cowboys head coach. And those around him are encouraging him to pursue it, and Jones is enamored with the idea. When Jerry Jones gets enamored with something, we know he generally is going to do it. So that's step one. I guess this comes down to, like, who do you believe more? The Ed Werder reports, the Adam Schefter quote from Deion Sanders. Is he just kind of, like, doing the good PR thing and putting a statement out there through somebody? Or does he actually – I mean, it's smokescreen season all around. It's smokescreen season about, like, what players teams like. It's smokescreen season about what quarterbacks are going to have jobs at certain places next year. It's smokescreen season about which coaches organizations are leaning towards and whether or not that coach wants that job as well, if they have options. And Deion certainly has options because he can just stay at Colorado. Now, if this were to happen, though, we all know what happens from here. And this is why this matters to us in Cleveland. Like, it almost feels like as long as the Cowboys job is open, we're going to be held hostage to Deion Sanders, because if Deion Sanders becomes the Cowboys head coach, we know what happens next. He finds a way to trade up and get his son. And then whoever he trades with gets some massive haul, and we kind of go from there. Now, whether or not it's the Browns remains to be seen. Whether or not this even happens remains to be seen. But as we concoct all these crazy trade scenarios involving the Dallas Cowboys, who would want to trade up and get Shador Sanders, does the name Dak Prescott do anything for you, Cleveland? Because I got to be honest, I'd be interested. Everybody keeps saying, give me a viable option that isn't one of these rookies that makes sense in terms of like, this is a guy that can, you know, help us and we can win now with and whatever. And then you throw a name out there and everyone's like, well, that's not a viable option. I don't like that option. Nobody likes these options. And I feel like a lot of people are going to be out on Dak Prescott. And if that's the case, like, I just don't have any answers for you. You're basically painting me into a corner where it's like, you just want me to say, well, you have to draft a rookie. And I don't know if that's the case. Like, if they don't like these guys, they don't feel like they're a fit for Kevin Stefanski's offense, because that's the number one thing at this point that I am basing my quarterback decision off of, is what's going to work for Jarrett Allen, is going to work for Kevin Stefanski. I'm trying to watch the Cavs game at the same time as I do a show. Dangerous game. But my number one criteria is what's going to work for Kevin Stefanski, what quarterback fits. And if none of these guys fit, you can't just draft one to draft one. And so if that's the case, and you're mad about Kirk Cousins, and you're mad about the possibility of Sam Darnold, you're mad about Aaron Rodgers as an option, I think Dak Prescott rises above all those names and is somebody that you could at least feel pretty comfortable with moving into the future for at least several years in terms of the quality of quarterback play that you're going to get. I will ask Nick Shook about Dak Prescott as a fit for the Browns. He joins us from NFL.com coming up here shortly. In about 6 minutes.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Or so. Keep it locked. It's Spencer German with you on 92 through the 50.
Because they need a veteran option, regardless of who it is, whether they would try to bring Winston back, which I think they're pretty done with that, or pluck somebody else from the free agency market. That's really going to set the tone for the entire offseason because, and honestly, that might not be the end of it. You know, they could go get a guy who could be a bridge, who could be a potential starter, but also draft a guy and kind of let him duke it out. Now that, you know, we basically don't expect Deshaun Watson to play at all in 2025 based on, you know, the reports about him re-injuring his Achilles. So they need not one, they need two. And I think that, you know, they'll probably find that veteran in the period before the draft and then they'll attack it accordingly. I personally am of the opinion that you don't really have the, I don't know, the luxury of being able to wait around or just try to, you know, plug a gap with a veteran. You know, maybe you try to swing a deal for a guy like Kirk Cousins who has familiarity with Kevin Stefanski. Yeah. You know, I wrote a piece on NFL.com this week about 9 potential landing spots for Sam Darnold. I listed the Browns as one of them, but I don't feel great about that, primarily because I think the money is not quite going to make sense for the Browns, nor do I think what Sam did in his final 2 games is the best sign of confidence that you believe that he can come in and handle the job. So the fit kind of makes sense, but I think that they're going to, you know, leave no stone unturned. And when it comes to the draft, you know, at number 2, every mock draft you pull up right now has the Browns taking Abdul Carter.
Yeah.
And all due respect to Abdul Carter, I don't really know if he's a number 2 pick. This class is not the strongest necessarily, but with a player like Travis Hunter out there, who most expect will be a corner in the NFL, it's a position of strength for the Browns as of now. Might not be in a couple of years, depending on what happens with Denzel Ward and Greg Newsome and everything else. You know, I have a hard time taking Carter there. And frankly, I have a hard time not taking a quarterback when you've had instability of the position for the last 3 years. And even going back to the year that Baker was injured, the last 4 years. It just feels like if you have enough confidence in either of the guys that are available, then you pull the trigger on one of them. It's just a matter of, you know, are you a Shedeur Sanders front office and does he go number 1 to Tennessee? And are you not a Cam Ward front office? Because at that point you have to consider other options. But if you like both of them, then you're in the position to take one of them. Personally, I would take Cam Ward. He might not be there at 2. And if he's not there and you're not a fan of Shedeur, then you look elsewhere. But, you know, I'm kind of just covering all the bases with this answer. But, you know, if it's up to me, I'm taking a quarterback as long as I like him.
Well, so it's interesting because you touch on, I think, where a lot of fans are at. And I've seen, like, we've seen the debates on social media over this. Like, you just have to take a quarterback because you've had so much stability there. But I think you said it well, Nick, because I think you're right. Like, yeah, in an ideal world, you take one. But if they identify one of those guys as their guy and he goes 1, you can't just take the other guy because he's there and you need a quarterback, because that just basically signals like you're already from the start settling for a guy that you don't even necessarily think is a good fit.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And I don't think any front office with, you know, that's qualified to handle the job, any GM is going to make that mistake. Maybe in years past, and it is a quarterback-driven league, and we have seen guys that are worse than these guys go pretty high. But it just feels like, like, I'll say, neither of these guys are Blake Bortles to the Jaguars, okay? Like, it's not that dire of a situation necessarily, but that's why I think free agency is going to tell us everything about where the Browns are headed next season. Because, you know, you take a veteran who is simply a bridge, then he's simply a bridge and you're going to take a quarterback. If you take a veteran who you think could legitimately come in and play, which a lot of people didn't think that about Sam Darnold when he went to the Vikings last year and they drafted J.J. McCarthy. They thought that was McCarthy's job, especially after the preseason debut he had. And then we saw what happened there, so a lot of different things could happen. It's all about what your expectations are with guys. But I think that's going to signal a lot of what the Browns do. And it's going to tell us a lot about what they think about these quarterbacks if they end up, you know, taking a relatively big swing on a guy.
So you mentioned a number of the veteran options sort of in your answer, as you said. But is there one of those that you think is the best fit? Is it Kirk Cousins? Is it Sam Darnold? Is it maybe Aaron Rodgers if a divorce with the Jets is imminent?
Well, I hope it's not Aaron Rodgers for the Browns' sake. But
wouldn't that be a disaster? You go from Deshaun Watson to Aaron Rodgers on Pat McAfee every day.
The Browns are still stuck in the Watson thing. They don't need to add Aaron Rodgers into the mess. I think that, I mean, just logically speaking, the Kirk Cousins makes the most sense.
Yeah.
You know, his slide in Atlanta was ugly. You know, he had a series where he, you know, went 0-for-6 touchdown to interception ratio in like 3 games. It was bad. It was really bad. But I also don't necessarily agree with how they used him. You know, this is a guy who thrived out of play action in Minnesota, including when Kevin Stefanski was the offensive coordinator there. They barely ever ran play action. And the question was, can he just not move because of the Achilles? Or is it just like they don't want to, you know, use play action? That was a big question that we never quite had answered before they benched him for Michael Penix. That's the fit that makes the most sense to me. The price is going to be an issue because of that contract he signed. They would have to work out some sort of deal where they could get him at a lower rate than the one he's signed to right now. And Atlanta has said so far, you know, we're fine with keeping him as a backup. That's a lot of money to pay to a backup.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's not going to hold, and they're going to find a way to move him. And if they move him, the Browns would be an ideal trade partner. It's just not at that rate. After that, it gets kind of weird. You could consider Darnold. You could consider both the Steelers quarterbacks if either of them are available. I don't think Browns fans really be excited about Russell Wilson. And I don't, I mean, as much as Justin Fields is a Buckeye and everything else, and frankly, that was a guy that I would like to see the Browns add last year. I don't know if that's necessarily a fit either. So it's kind of a weird market, but I definitely wouldn't add Aaron Rodgers to this team. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Nick Shook joining us on the show, NFL.com, on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. How much trust do you think there should be at this point for Andrew Berry after his first 5 years and everything that's kind of transpired and missing on some big picks that he has made during his tenure? And how much power should he have in sort of identifying that franchise quarterback, or should it be more so in Kevin Stefanski's boat?
Yeah, I think they have to work in tandem when it comes to quarterback, because we'll know eventually years from now how the Watson thing went down, but that wasn't a good fit. And, you know, for as much as he led the league in passing the last time he'd played, it just didn't fit. And, you know, we saw Watson get hurt and regress, you know, in terms of processing and everything else to the point where he was just not a playable quarterback this season. But the fit was never there to begin with. I think they got to work in tandem to figure out the best fit for his scheme, for what he wants to do as a play caller, which I fully anticipate he'll be, you know, taking over play calling duties. He hasn't said it yet, but after what happened this year, I can't believe he wouldn't. And then when it comes to the rest of Berry's draft tenure, the one thing he hasn't been good at is drafting receivers. That's why they've acquired receivers. And, you know, they acquire Amari Cooper, they acquire Jerry Jeudy, Elijah Moore. I mean, we saw what we saw from Jeudy. He's a stud. Like, that was a good deal. It was a cheap deal. They signed to a contract extension immediately for good reason. We saw why. But he's also nailed some picks. You know, Newsom was a good pick. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah was a good pick. I think that, you know, Michael Hall showed signs before he got hurt in the last game of the year. And I think he's, you know, he's made some savvy picks elsewhere. So it's been a bit of a checkered history. But the one thing he's clearly not the greatest at is drafting receivers. So hopefully they're not in the market. I mean, at number two, they're not going to be, but hopefully they're not in the market at that position. And trust-wise, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to lose sleep as a Browns fan because he's still the GM? You know, like, you got to just let the chips fall where they may. Because let's face it, John Dorsey did a good job of turning this team from a laughingstock into a competitive team. But Andrew Berry is the one that kind of saw them to contention, right? They made the playoffs twice in the last 5 years, and they won a playoff game in 2020. So I think you got to stick with him and ride with him and ride with this regime. This is the most stability this franchise has seen, I think, since they've been back. So ride with it. And just, I keep telling people, man, you know, they may just be a quarterback and maybe a piece or two away. I don't feel confident about Nick Chubb's viability anymore. I mean, he's been through so many injuries. He just didn't quite look like the same back. But then again, it was a pretty significant knee injury that he came back from. But, I mean, Jerome Ford looked good in spots. And the offensive line, for as many injuries as they dealt with and how banged up they were to start the season, DeJuan Jones was a pretty good find. He's done a good job around a lot of these positions. No GM is perfect, of course, really. But, yeah, I think if you're going to lose sleep over, you know, Andrew Berry's draft history, I think you may need to reevaluate your priorities.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point you bring up about like stability is the key one here. Like, we know that these teams like to have the front office in lockstep with the coach, and you know, I think that's the biggest reason why he's back with Stefanski, and they're going to try to sort of see this thing through after the Deshaun Watson debacle. Along the lines of the coaching staff, obviously the Browns hired Tommy Rees this week as their offensive coordinator, promoting him from within. Seems like he's a guy who seems to be like gaining traction in the NFL, and he's kind of on the rise. What is your perception of like how that move and hire is being sort of received across the NFL?
Yeah, he's got an interesting track record, because I think guys who are on the rise, it can be fool's gold sometimes. I always like to point to Pat Shurmur's viability as a head coach, because good play caller, not a good head coach of the Browns, gets the job with the Giants, and as soon as they hired him, I was like, that's not going to go well, and it didn't go well. Some guys aren't cut out to be head coaches, but when it comes to coordinator, it's a little bit shorter of a climb. Rees, you know, he wasn't very good at Notre Dame. He goes to the Saban School of Coaching Rehabilitation at Alabama and does a good job, and then ends up on the Browns staff. And, you know, I did Bastian and Feltzer this week, and they asked me, you know, what about offensive coordinator candidates? And for a second, I forgot about Reese's candidacy, and he was a favorite for, you know, about a week or so. So that kind of tells you everything you need to know, which is that, like, he's a sleeper of a pick. But if Kevin Stefanski's calling plays, it doesn't matter as much to me. I think he needs somebody who can work in tandem with him better than Ken Dorsey did. I know that they didn't have Nick Chubb for, you know, at the level that you expect from Nick Chubb, and the offensive line was banged up. But what I saw from Dorsey last year was exactly what I saw from him in Buffalo. And it's exactly what I told everybody they were going to see when the Browns hired him, which is Dorsey offenses don't run the ball well. And the Browns ran the ball like 33% of the time, and they didn't do it very well most of the time, and put way too much on a quarterback in an offense without stability as a position. So they were doomed kind of from the start. I think that they'll come back closer to center on that with Rees there, but I think it's more about having somebody that you can kind of meld the minds of Rees and Stefanski together and not focus so much on who is the offensive coordinator and worry more about who is calling plays. And I fully anticipate that's going to be Stefanski, and I'd be shocked if it wasn't.
I have two more things. One that takes us back to the quarterback conversation for the Browns for a second, because all the rumors that are swirling about Deion Sanders potentially going to the Cowboys. What about a potential wild blockbuster trade that would involve the Cowboys trading up to 2 to get Shador, and the Browns take on Dak Prescott? Is that something that would maybe be enticing for the Browns?
Yeah, it would fix everybody's problems, wouldn't it? It would be great. Look, let's see, 2023, Dak had a legitimate MVP candidacy going into December, in a year in which nobody really separated themselves, until he went to Buffalo and had a clunker of a game and fell completely out of it, and Lamar ends up winning MVP. Lamar's season this year was vastly better than last year, and yet he may not win MVP because of voter fatigue. So if Dak was in the race for MVP last year, that's a pretty good deal. I mean, that's a nice little addition. They would have to kind of figure out the money on that, but then again, the salary cap is a myth. It would also drive headlines for months. This is the second time I've been asked about the Sanders to Dallas thing today. First time about the Dak trade, but that's instantly what I thought of when I heard the whole, well, what if Deion gets the job at you know, the Cowboys?
That's what we're all thinking about. We're all held hostage to Deion Sanders right now.
Yeah, it's like, anyone wants to trade up and get Shador? And I'm like, oh, I know a team is sitting in a good spot again that could use a quarterback. They happen to wear orange and brown. So, I mean, everybody's problems would be solved, right? And until we figure out if Dak can run Stefanski's offense. I think it'd be great. I think it's far-fetched. I think it's crazy. But I've also seen some pretty crazy things happen in my decade covering the league. So wouldn't be too surprised.
I agree. All right, we got like a minute left here, Nick, real quick. In relation to the playoffs this weekend, is the Bills-Ravens matchup to decide who's going to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl?
Until the Chiefs are eliminated, I will believe that the Chiefs are going to win the whole thing. And it's only because of the last 2 years and the last 5 years, really. Like, the first Super Bowl I covered, the Chiefs come back and beat the Niners. Okay? Like, I can't go against what I've seen. And until they're eliminated, I'm going to lean that way. And I also detect a slight bit of fraudulence with the Bills, as crazy as it sounds, with Josh Allen being in line to win MVP. But I think the Ravens are the best team in the conference, and I think they win this weekend, and I think they win the next weekend too. So, to answer your question, yes, that does decide who wins the AFC if it's the Ravens. If it's the Bills that win today, then no, it doesn't decide, because then I lean back toward the Chiefs.
Just say 13 seconds and all the Bills will just shudder and be scared of playing the Chiefs again. Nick Shook, tremendous stuff as always, covers the NFL and, of course, has plenty of insight into the Cleveland Browns at NFL.com. You can follow him on X at the Nick Shook. Nick, appreciate you as always, my friend. We'll catch up soon, and I look forward to catching up with you at the Combine as well.
Oh, yeah. We're not too far away now, my friend.
That's right. It's coming.
About a month and a half.
That's right. I can't wait. I'm going to spend a lot more time there this year than I did last year because we got a lot more to talk about when it comes to the Browns and what they're going to do. So
yeah, we'll definitely spend many an hour together during that week.
I can't wait. I can't wait. See you then, Nick. I appreciate you, brother.
All right. See you. Thanks.
Yep. Nick Shook, as always, on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Great stuff. We take a pause. Dak Prescott, does it do anything for you? Talk about it coming up in about 6 minutes from now on The Fan.
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.